This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We are no strangers to earthquakes here in the Bay Area, but there's been nothing in recent memory to match the 9.0 quake that shook Japan on March 11th, 2011. The quake set off a deadly tsunami and was so powerful, it shifted the Earth's axis by several inches. But the news that came out of Japan the next day gripped the world with fear. A nuclear explosion at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant. Reactors melted down, releasing giant plumes of radiation into the atmosphere. Here on the other edge of the Pacific Ocean, many were concerned, would it reach us? Over the years, this concern has not gone away. While radioactive cesium from Fukushima was detected 100 miles off the coast of Eureka, California this week, it's not nearly concentrated enough to raise flags for health concern. But if people are still worried here, 5,000 miles and an ocean away from the nuclear plant, what about there? How are people in Fukushima making sense of the health risks in their environment? And when it comes to one of the most daily necessities, food, how are they figuring out what's safe? KALW's Ali Budner traveled to Fukushima this summer to ask this question. She started at a grocery store.
Okay. I head towards the sliding doors of the supermarket. With the bright fluorescent lights and cheerful music, this could almost be a grocery store in my neighborhood. But I'm in Fukushima, Japan.
My name is Michio Kainuma. I was born in Fukushima Prefecture.
Fukushima, a name that evokes fear for some. But to Michio Kainuma, a spry 61-year-old English teacher and my guide at the supermarket, Fukushima is so much more than its radioactive reputation. It's home.
And the green pepper, this is really cheap and fresh. And
I've met up with Kainuma to do perhaps one of the most basic and yet most controversial things you can do in a place after nuclear disaster. Prepare a meal.
I'm going to make tempura tonight and with using all of the fresh vegetables here.
Oh, beautiful. That sounds delicious.
Okay.
Yeah.
In front of us is a display of produce grown and packaged here in Fukushima.
Some onions here and potatoes.
A row of photographed faces are lined up above the food. They kind of look like baseball cards, but they're portraits of local farmers.
Who is handsome?
They all look handsome.
Despite the supermarket's promotion of local food and Kainuma's positive attitude, I'm wondering, what's really okay to eat here? Right after the nuclear plant exploded in Japan, I remember walking into a grocery store in San Francisco and noticing the big bulk bins of seaweed were all wiped clean. People thought it would protect them from the radiation that might be drifting towards them from across the Pacific. But ironically, as people scurried to protect themselves here, some people much closer to the contamination didn't even know a nuclear meltdown had occurred.
Even the hydrogen explosion occurred, I didn't know that. Because we couldn't see TV.
Because you didn't have power.
Yeah.
And no one came to tell her.
No.
So when did you find out that there was radiation coming this direction and landing?
Maybe
on
10 days or 15 days.
Just after the earthquake, the Kainumas were focused on meeting their basic needs.
Food. I think the first thing I think about is food.
She and her family stood in a long line at this very grocery store, waiting to get what limited food was available. Radioactivity was far from their minds. They just didn't want to be hungry.
Of course, I knew about the explosion of the radioactive substances. I really worried about that invisible fear.
Invisible. As Kainuma said, they had no way of knowing how much danger they were in or where it was. One of the scariest things about radiation is we can't perceive it with any of our senses. Now Kainuma knows full well that her city was caught in the shadow of nuclear fallout. But here, buying food more than 3 years later, she shows little concern about it. As she shops, I wonder how she went from fearing irradiated food to enthusiastically buying local. It's not exactly because the farmers are handsome, though the pictures, she tells me, do help.
Every name is stick to the pictures, so we can see the farmer's face. That's really comfortable for us to choose what we want to buy.
Maybe patriotism plays a role, too. Kainuma's husband worked for the local government, and Kainuma herself has volunteered with them, distributing leaflets about efforts to monitor food.
So basically, if you see grown in Fukushima, to you that means safe.
Yes, yes.
She points out what she tells me is a unique inspection code on every bag of rice. There's even a phone number.
And it says it's toll-free dials, 012, la-la-la-la-la. You can see the information from here about this bag.
Have you ever called?
No.
You just trust?
Yeah, trust. Yeah, because I have been to the inspection center, and I can clearly see that it's latest technology shows it is safe. So I perfectly trust all of them.
Trust. That might be what this all boils down to. As we check out and leave the store, I can't help thinking that shopping for food is a form of trust. After all, I often look for and trust labels that tell me whether the food I'm buying is organic or local. Of course, I might be more skeptical if I were watching out for nuclear radiation. And naturally, some people in Fukushima are.
My name is Chiaki Oku.
Oku is 56, and like Kainuma, she's an English teacher who lives in Fukushima Prefecture. Unlike Kainuma, she has completely changed her food habits.
I was worried about the food and water right after the accident.
Even though food from Fukushima is cheaper, she still buys milk and vegetables from other areas. I'm talking to her on Skype, and she brings her computer over to the kitchen. Going through the produce in her refrigerator is like a tour of all the other parts of Japan.
I have radish from Ibaraki Prefecture. And potatoes are made in Hokkaido.
After the disaster, Oku's children and grandchildren moved to a different part of Japan because of the radiation threat.
I was very sad and lonely and confused.
She decided to stay because, well, it was her home. I tell her about Michio Kainuma's trust in the government and the food system.
It's her choice. So I don't want to say it's danger. Don't eat this one or something. Depend on the people, the personal thinking.
She has a bad feeling about the vegetables.
Just only me, but I don't want to eat. I feel it.
So Oku's decisions about food, just like Michio Kainuma's, are based on trust, or lack thereof, a feeling in the gut. Understandably, she's overwhelmed when she imagines intensely restricting her shopping like this for the rest of her life.
Maybe I will eat that food in the future, near future. But from now, I have to take care of my body.
And she's not about to put her health in the hands of the government.
Japanese government say, don't worry, it's safe. But this is not true, I think.
Now, there are clear reasons why some people like Chiaki Oku don't trust the authorities. For one, the Japanese government, along with TEPCO, the company who owns and runs the nuclear plant, notoriously mishandled the meltdown disaster. And there's a revolving door between government and the nuclear industry in Japan. One group, the Union of Concerned Scientists, called it a perfect example of regulators being too close to the industry they oversee. And it's regulators from that same government overseeing the food supply. But there are ways people can test their food directly. There are 26 food monitoring centers in Fukushima, just for homegrown produce. Like this one.
Taking our shoes off and putting on plastic slippers to go inside the food monitoring center.
At this center, you walk across squeaky blue sticky mats that keep you from tracking in extra dirt, dust, or anything from the outside world that might be contaminated with radiation.
People were extremely concerned about food safety and their products. So we built centers like the one you're standing in with devices you see here.
Kenichi Hanzawa is the technical official at this monitoring center. Stout cylindrical machines stand at attention on short tripod legs. They look like cousins of R2-D2, and they're designed to measure becquerels, units of radioactivity. Hanzawa demonstrates the nearly silent machine with a sample of rice. The whole thing is faster than an ATM transaction. This rice checks out. It's under the new local standard, 100 becquerels of radioactive cesium per kilogram. To put that in context, that's 12 times more strict than the U.S. radiation standard. For the first year, the center was swamped.
We would get phone calls from people who wanted to come here. Some would get very upset, and some were even in tears. It created an atmosphere of panic.
These centers have been vital in calming that panic. Since so many people in Fukushima grow their own food, being able to test it for radiation can be like giving people glasses to let them see what's otherwise an invisible threat. But Fukushima is also a big commercial farming region. These farmers have had their own set of problems. This orchard is in a valley green with peach trees, alive with crickets and cicadas.
My name is Shinichi Katahira.
Katahira is a fourth-generation peach farmer and owner of Michinoku Orchard in the part of Fukushima known as the Fruit Line. This used to be the second-largest peach-growing region in the country. It's far enough inland that they didn't really suffer from the earthquake or tsunami. But the next day, when the power plant exploded,
we were advised to evacuate, and we thought, it's all over.
Katahira's orchard is about 40 miles away from the power plant, not close enough to be officially evacuated, though many people did leave.
But for people like us, farmers who own this land and work on this land, we couldn't just pick up and leave. So we waited for more information.
Eventually, he decided to stay and continue farming. But there were some obvious obstacles. How would he guarantee his crops were safe? Katahira and other farmers consulted with experts at the local university.
The first thing we decided to do was to use high-pressure washers to wash the bark of these trees. Since it's all fallen on the ground, our next step was removing the upper 5 centimeters of the soil. That's a lot of soil that has to be moved.
And there was no official place for it to go. With limited resources, they trusted what becomes conventional wisdom after a nuclear disaster. Radioactive cesium, once bound to clay, doesn't travel much.
We buried the contaminated soil in about a half acre of our land, just a little ways from here.
Not all farmers in Fukushima have pressed on. Some people were forced to leave their contaminated land. Fukushima Prefecture used to be the fourth largest rice producer in Japan, but has dropped to 7th.
Life has changed a lot. It'll never be the same as before the accident.
As we leave, he gestures to his trees.
Please, try my peaches.
I indulge.
Oh, this one looks good.
Katahira says he's constantly testing his fruit to make sure it's safe. And standing here under his trees, I believe him. But will people buy it if they have the choice? Should they? That begs the question, how dangerous is radiation in our food? What do we know about how it affects our health? We know that one very large dose from a bomb or a meltdown can cause death or severe sickness. But there's also naturally occurring radiation all around us, in the air, soil, even in food. Bananas, for example, contain 130 becquerels per kilogram of radioactive potassium. That's higher than the level of radioactive cesium Fukushima allows in its food. Doctors and researchers, including from the National Academy of Sciences, are concerned about the increased risks for cancer and genetic mutations. But they still haven't determined the exact impacts of low doses of radiation over time. So that's more uncertainty, which itself can harm people's health. The World Health Organization concluded that in Fukushima, like in Chernobyl, the chronic stress of the nuclear accident could outweigh other health problems. What if you thought about radiation every time you went shopping, or ate, or cooked?
To make sushi and tempura and noodles.
Ah.
Okay. Could you help me?
I would love to help you.
Okay. I'm at Michio Kainuma's home now, watching her prepare dinner. Rice and vegetables for tempura.
2 cups of rice.
Kainuma cooks traditionally, carefully considering every detail of the meal. She listens to the changing pitch of the tempura oil as it bubbles. She watches the color of the boiling meat.
So now you see on the surface of the oil bubbling.
But what's the protocol for an ingredient that can't be sensed? We all have our own way of dealing with the unknown. The Kainumas choose to eat locally.
Itadakimasu!
At the end of the meal, Kainuma's husband turns on his favorite classical music while she slices up fruit for dessert. She asks me if I want a peach.
How about a bite of peaches, Fukushima peaches?
Peaches, the symbol of Fukushima City. Fukushima has a long way to go before it solves its problems with radiation, the future of food production, and the dislocation of residents. But larger questions loom too. Japan is crisscrossed by fault lines. All 48 of the country's nuclear power reactors remain shut down in the wake of the Fukushima disaster. But industry and government leaders are pushing to reopen one in the coming year. And here in California, the active Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant sits just miles from fault lines. So while we don't understand the full impact of nuclear fallout on our food and our health, maybe we should try a little harder to grasp it. Because it could just be a matter of time before something like Fukushima happens again, in Japan or here. Until the long-term studies are done, though, people have to feel their way through this disorienting and invisible threat. As I savor this slice of Fukushima peach, I feel connected in some small way to the land where it grew, and to the people I've met who still have to navigate between trust and fear. For KALW Radio and the San Francisco State Fukushima Reporting Project, I'm Ali Budner.
That piece was produced in partnership with the San Francisco State University Fukushima Reporting Project. Special thanks to William McMichael, John Funabiki, Gary Sakamoto, Nicole Martinez, and the Fukushima University Ambassadors Program. You can see images from Ali's visit to Fukushima at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents.